We now present Three Haiku by Katy Perry, Jay-Z, and Rebecca Black. Pictures of last night. Pink flamingos in the pool. It's a blacked out blur. You are in New York. These streets make you feel brand new. Big lights inspire you. It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. We so excited. You know what's really sad? Those took 3 hours of work on my part. Haiku is hard. Today on the show, our salute to a form that's 400 years old and 17 syllables long. And now he stares into space and does not make eye contact, but he knows you're here. Colin McEnroe.
All right, that is me. And I have to say that working on that introduction, I realized that at a certain point I had worked harder on Rebecca Black's haiku than Rebecca Black had worked on her song. Even though every syllable of the haiku was available there in the song itself. We're going to talk about haiku today. It is, we'll even debate, I suppose, or discuss whether it's really 400 years old or older or not as old. I think that actually is sort of a moving question a little bit. And we have here with us, let me tell you who will be joining us here in the studio with us. We have Stanford Forrester. He's a poet, editor of Bottle Rockets, and has several haiku included in Haiku in English, the First 100 Years, published by Norton. Evan Flashen, a lawyer with the firm Bracewell & Giuliani, and author of the law blog BasisPoints.com. Why would we have a lawyer here for our haiku show? We'll explain. We will make sense of that to you in the next segment here. But we're going to start out with Stanford Forrester. We're also going to start out with you. Our number is 860-275-7266. If you have a question about haiku, if you have perhaps things that you want to read and share with us, give us a call, 860-275-7266. You may also tweet us haiku. That would seem perfect. Two highly constrictive, disciplined forms. 17 syllables, 140 characters. You may do that at WNPR, Colin. That would be a lovely thing if you were to tweet us a haiku. And what else do we want you to do? Well, we also have already recorded some of your haiku on a voicemail. So we'll be playing some of those out of some of the segments that we do. We were particularly interested, just because it's something I do, whether people did haiku about work. And it turns out they do. Anyway, we'll be getting to all that. We're going to start out with Stanford Forrester. And probably about 18 things that we've already said are wrong, or at least potentially wrong, including possibly even the way we are pronouncing haiku. Is that how you say it? I think we grow up saying haiku, but somehow or other there's some part of me that thinks it's haiku.
Well, if you use a fake Japanese accent, maybe that'll help.
Yeah. All right.
we generally say haiku, but there are the syllables, the onji, which are Japanese basically syllables, are much more definitive.
All right. And is the plural, I assume the plural is also haiku. But,
yes, yeah. It's not haikus.
Not haikus. Haikai.
They don't do, in Japanese language, there's no singular and plural.
And give us a sense of the history of this. I mean, I said 400 years because some people, I think, sort of start the clock running with Basho, the poet who probably is still most prominently associated with the form. But I also noticed that you're included in an anthology called Haiku, the First One. How it's Haiku in English, the First 100 Years.
Yeah.
I mean, tell us the history of this form.
Well, actually, Colin, it's Evan. Let me interrupt for a moment.
Yeah.
Folks on the radio, I'm just an amateur. Stanford is the real deal in terms of haiku, and he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Thank you. I hope that's true. Anyway.
We know it's true.
The interesting thing is haiku is really only 100 years old, not 400 years old. Mm. We start off with Basho, and Basho lived from 1644 to 1694. Mm-hmm. And at that time, if you were a disciplined academic Japanese scholar, you had to know Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, haiku had its roots lightly rooted in China.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was you started a poem called the linked poem. It would be called a renku. And what you do is the first person, usually was the head poet, would mm-hmm. come to a party. He would be invited. The person who was at the party would maybe supply a lot of sake
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And the person had the honor of writing the first part of the poem,
mm-hmm.
which was called the hoku. And that was the most important part of the poem because it was independent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could go, like you would do 575, I would do 77, and then Evan would do 575, and you'd go like this for 36 links or 100 links, but nobody saved those other parts, generally speaking. It's just like they cut the head off of the snake, that the hoku was the thing that they saved and considered the most important part.
If you want sort of a sense of I think, what that was like sort of as an oral tradition, there's in the Sondheim musical, Pacific Overtures, there's a song called Poems where I think at least two people are kind of trading back and forth that way.
Yeah.
So you've got that, but that's not really exactly haiku, right?
Well, what happened was you had all the four masters would be Basho, Busson, Issa, and Masao Okoshiki. And Shiki died in 1902. He was from 1867 to 1902. And he basically said, haiku, the problem now in Japan with haiku is that you're only specifically on certain subjects. Like you could not write about love in haiku. You could not write about politics in haiku. Or there were certain things, and it had to have been certain Chinese characters called kanji. So he said it was basically like if we had 28 people here and you were given a cup of tea and you got the first tea bag and we were only allowed to use one tea bag. So by the time that it got to the 28th person, they were just drinking boiled water. The haiku had kind of died. So he was a big reformer and said the hoku now could become the haiku. The three lines or the one line could stand on its own.
I also have this very untutored sense that there's and this is sort of my probably untutored American sense that haiku is about nature and that there's something else called senryu that's more about sort of personal foibles.
Exactly.
All right. It's untutored, but it's correct.
It is 100% correct.
All right. So we're going to explore all of this as we go along. We have a lot of callers who knew that we were doing this. I think Stanford Forrester may have tipped some people off, including David in New Orleans, who I believe is president of the Haiku Society. Is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you're on the air. So what have you got for us?
First of all, thank you, Stanford, for inviting me in on this. Stanford is hands down my favorite haiku poet.
Oh, that's high praise from the president.
Hands down. Yeah, hands down. I like what he's been saying so far. And I would just like to say about nature, I like to write haiku about urban landscapes. And I still call them haiku and not senryu. Maybe I'm bad for that. Maybe Stanford can weigh in on this. So, like, for example, I write a haiku about my city of New Orleans. Here it is. Pizza parlor after the murders. Help wanted.
Well, that's chilling. The distinction that I guess what I was making, which may or may not be the right one, maybe could be amplified or extended to say that maybe haiku is about sort of things that are not about people. And in other words, maybe your New Orleans haiku is just right.
Yeah, I mean, senryu, they said, like, if you wanted to learn what Japan was really like, live in Japan, it wouldn't be haiku, generally speaking, in the past, because it was more idealized. There might be a little bit of reality or truthfulness. I mean, more like it was basically praising nature. With senryu, you wrote about your mother-in-law, you wrote about the tax collector, you talked about the priest, you talked about the mayor of the town. It really was more about what humans do.
As we go along here, we're going to be sort of folding in some of your haiku as well. We'd love to hear from you, 860-275-7266. Stanford Forrester, my other sense, particularly after Kayon talked to you, is that what we learned in fourth grade or whenever this idea was introduced to us, that haiku is always 575, is not necessarily something that holds true across the spectrum.
Yeah, the interesting thing first is that there is no definitive definition of haiku in Japan. It does not exist. Japan, they have hundreds, close to thousands of haiku clubs. Some of these clubs have 17,000 members in them. They all disagree on the definitions, hence that's why they're spread out. And the thing is, haiku is we have free verse haiku, which is just as old as this traditional haiku. And the traditional haiku is 17 onji, which in Onji says, unrhymed Japanese poem recording an essence of a moment keenly perceived, in which nature is linked to human nature. It is usually consists of 17 Onji. Now, the English translation would be a foreign adaptation usually written in three lines, totaling fewer than 17 syllables.
And when we say onji, that also would include punctuation
That's
as well.
Correct.
That's one of the distinctions. In other words, so punctuation would count as syllables, as noise within the poem.
Yeah, like say if we said, hi, how are you? We're not going to give the question mark a syllable count, where in Japanese there is no punctuation. So they would have an actual word that would define that intonation. So you would have question mark. You would have three syllables added extra in there.
My sense, and maybe, David, we have the president of the Haiku Society of America on the line from New Orleans, too. Maybe you'd like to speak to this as well. My sense is that haiku is experiencing not exactly a renaissance, but it seems in wider circulation. I mean, some of this just could be the interwebs because everything's on the interwebs, so haiku is on the interwebs. But do you have some sense? I'll ask both of you, but I'll start with you, David. Do you have some sense that this is kind of a good time for haiku? And if so, do you know a reason why?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think around 2000, and like you say, the interweb helped a lot. Haiku's just gone global. This summer I was in haiku conferences in Germany and Bulgaria. I've gone to conferences in Serbia, Japan. I mean, of course, Japan. But all over the world, it's just exploding. And every language has to deal with the issue of 575 and what to do with that. I've translated 10,000 haiku from Issa to English from my website. And I got to say, Issa doesn't always follow 575. That's the normal pattern, but even someone who is traditional like Issa, who created the tradition or helped create it with Basho and Buson, he also is quite free to have longer or shorter phrases. And so I think that gives us license too. And as Stanford says, even in Japan, there is a free haiku movement, and haiku is not absolutely set in 575.
Stanford, you know, what about the sort of a haiku boom, such as it is, that seems to be happening?
Go ahead,
Stanford.
I think that it is because of zombie haiku, and we have a lot of different haikus, gangster haiku, traffic haiku, redneck haiku.
Spam haiku
was one of the first offenders, and they had, like, I remember looking at, without 100,000 hits, like in a week. I mean, and it is basically created not by the poet himself or herself. It was created by the publisher to promote the book.
So there was an actual book of spam haiku.
Yes, and the thing is that sometimes even when books are being reviewed, like the USA Today will review a book on these poems, they will not say in the book review that this is not a serious book. This should be in the comedy section next to Mad magazines and other stuff.
I'm shuffling papers here because I actually have some spam haiku here somewhere, but I can't find it right now.
And they're about 20 years old, by the way.
I did pick up some zombie haiku. So that's like another new boomlet, zombie haiku.
Yeah.
I can just read a couple of them, those if you want, including Michael Ian Black, who's been on our show, wrote one. Brain-eating monsters make disappointing lovers because of the fear. This one is slightly obscene, but I have to read it anyway. This is by Christopher Moore. You are my desire. This is zombie haiku, mind you. You are my desire, eating your luscious love thoughts. My junk just dropped off. You can see why this would be appealing to people.
Yeah, and then none of those are haiku, because the definition for anybody in haiku is they have to have a season word.
A season word?
Yeah. So, or an implied season word. So if it doesn't have a season word, it falls into senru, which is basically a brother, a close cousin to haiku.
And actually, Colin, I'm going to disagree with that only slightly, in that there's Japanese haiku, which of course is the original, and then American haiku is a distinct form. Like Japanese baseball and American baseball are the same game, but there are some different rules. So to be true traditional haiku, of course, Stanford is absolutely right. The American version, as we do with so many other things in the world, ends up being more casual. if you read Stanford's books, though, in his haiku, you can tell that's the real deal.
But I think, you know, one thing, though, too, is you did have poets that were senryu poets in Japan and haiku poets.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for example, we'll have problems. Like, I'll be reading a haiku journal, and some person who has too much time on their hands will spend 20 pages writing, this poem published, it was a senryu, not a haiku, or, you know, because it was in the haiku section. So sometimes during history, a poem was clearly a senryu. And then one was clearly a haiku. And depending on fashion, literary fashion, sometimes they got closer together where it was very hard to distinguish the two.
I do have some spam haiku here that I've now found it in my notes. Silent former pig, one communal awareness, myriad pink bricks. And blue can of steel, what promise do you hold? Salt flesh so ripe. So until this show, I had no idea that spam haiku had been such a big thing. Our number, 860-275-7266. Let's grab one or two more calls. We've got a lot of calls coming in. We're going to then flow into the next segment here. We're going to bring in Evan talking about incorporating haiku into daily life, even into the world of business, into the world of business law, mergers and acquisitions, all that kind of stuff. But here's Jamie in Parsons Field, Maine, I'm going to guess. Hi, Jamie.
Yes, that's right. Hi.
Hi. So what have you got for us?
Well, first I want to thank Stanford for all his work. He's a wonderful editor and mentor and really has helped a lot of people gain a knowledge of the form. I just have a couple of haiku here that I'd like to share.
Please do.
And they definitely have a sense of the integration and connection of nature and human nature. The first one is, the deaf dog barks and barks, winter stars.
Hmm. All right. And I don't know what to do after a haiku, except go,
That's a good thing.
Yeah, okay.
Well, again, you know, it shows that those are concrete images, basically, you know, in contrast and juxtapose. So what we want to think about when we think about haiku is that it resonates with the reader or the listener so that they begin to participate in the poem, too, and think about, you know, what that means for them.
All right. So give us another one.
The second one is New Moon. A line of light under the door.
Those are great. Thank you so much for sharing them. And actually, you know, since we have Stanford Forrester here, I know you brought some of your haiku. Do you want music for your haiku? We can give you music. Do you want music? Are you going to read a couple haiku?
I'm going to read a couple haiku and maybe not.
Not music.
And what I thought I would do first is read some summer haiku because we are in summertime. And
it's all anybody's really saying right now is how hot they are.
How hot they
and
are.
How miserable they are.
I even have a summer haiku for you.
All right.
Let me have Evan go ahead.
Okay, Evan, does yours come to hand? Because he's sorting around in the Stanford Forrester haiku archives, which he's brought here.
Mine is called
Summer
in the City.
All right.
Buildings drip with sweat. Subway is an inferno. Sidewalk melts my shoes.
We should say that Evan Flaschen, in addition to being a lawyer with the law firm Bracewell and Giuliani, in addition to hosting the law blog basispoints.com, you were a major in Victorian poetry?
Victorian poetry.
Yeah. And so you thought that would be sort of set you up for the world of business law?
Well, I imagine you major in esoteric sarcasm, so we had equally valuable college majors.
Something along those lines, absolutely. So what have you got over there?
Okay. So I'm going to be reading – first of all, I want to just say that the word poetry in Chinese means word temple. Mm-hmm. So these poems act as a sanctuary for our daily lives. I'm going to read some summer haiku. Daylight, no one notices the firefly. Toy guns, the war lasts till dinner time. Field of fireflies, the toddler's first whisper. Backyard of fireflies, each moment a different constellation. Snail shell, listening to a tiny ocean. And I have just a few more here.
Okay.
Moving my reflection out of the way, planting water lilies. handful of sand, a flash of sunlight in each grain. Writing a haiku in the sand, a wave finishes it.
That's perfect. It also does strike me, if there is any kind of haiku boom, haiku renaissance, haiku whatever. I mean, I think a lot of it is digitally driven. The interwebs just give people an opportunity to do anything that pops into their heads and kind of semi-publish it. But I also think that in a world of chatter, in a world of just constant noise and not a lot of signal, there's something kind of gratifying about a haiku, the fact that it's boiled down and made simple. I mean, in this world right now that we in which we live, where we're just constantly bombarded with information all the time and digital chatter, there's something appealing about the
– And those words are packed. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's why the idea of the summer word, it doesn't have to say the word summer. But if we say daylight, I mean firefly, we know that's a summer word, you know, or we say moth, we know that's summer. So those words in itself give us like the difference between the beginning of the summer and the end of the summer. Big differences in feeling.
We're going to go to a break pretty soon and bring in some of Evan's business poetry. But before that, are there other things that are sort of at the heart of or part of the ethos of haiku? I'm thinking, just because I like saying it, I'm thinking wabi-sabi. I'm thinking
yes.
Sort of that. Give me a little wabi-sabi. Give them a sense. Can I get a little wabi-sabi? Actually, just tell people what it is, actually.
Okay, well, I can give you just one. And
All right.
Wabi-sabi is kind of like this very Thoreauvian transcendentalist.
Impermanence.
Impermanence, rustic,
mm-hmm.
You know, the ascetic, simplify.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, a good one. Loneliness, sitting by a fire that won't stay lit.
Yeah, but so wabi-sabi is a big part, I think, of the haiku aesthetic too. That sort of notion of
yes.
Of the fleetingness, the impermanence, and it's somehow or other married to a sense of simplification, asceticism, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
All right, it's just good to say wabi-sabi. Anyway, let's take a little break. You want to take one more call? We'll take one more call, then we'll take a break, and we'll come back with kind of a sense of business haiku. Here's Larry. It says in Coleraine, but I don't know where that is. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Yes, I'm in Coleraine, Massachusetts. That's up near Greenfield. I'm right up by the Vermont.
I got it. It's plain as the nose on my face.
Okay. So first of all, I'd like to say thanks to Sanford for asking me here today. And I have two summer haiku I'd like to read.
All right.
The first is a bit of Americana, I think, going back to the days of diners before, you know, the fast food franchises took over. And the second is timeless. Begin. At Kate's Diner, under the plastic cake lid, the necessary fly. I do like to get a little humor in.
That's a good one,
if
yeah.
I can.
It's also, it kind of conjures up Under the Dome by Stephen King, which is very fashionable right now. Go
also
ahead.
It's also can be read a little bit, not just as a picture, but the necessary fly. You have to have some contrast in there for art.
Absolutely.
There's some problem
intention.
That you need always for the art. The next one you'll notice is more auditory in imagery than visual, which is somewhat unusual in haiku, I believe. You can ask Stan if I'm right about that.
Well, this is radio, so we like that.
Okay. The first cicada, one long sizzling syllable, says it's summer.
Oh, I like that, too. That's an excellent one. Thank you so much, Larry. Thanks for calling in from Coleraine. You know what? We're going to take a break here. We want to, particularly if you write haiku at work, we got a lot of people who write haiku at work. We'd love to hear from you. 860-275-7266 or tweet us your haiku. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. We're going to go out. We set up a voicemail and let people drop off some of their work-related and other related haiku. And let's hear a little of that.
These are my haikus from work. I'm a school nurse. So the first one is, coworkers aging, women over 70, I am 31. And my next one is, young girls approach me, plagued by menstrual cramps, pleading, I heal them, Motrin.
The cows are asleep, the milk truck visits the farm, Farmer's Day begins. Milk tanker I drive, picking up milk at the farms. Very draining job.
Hi, this is Gene Seymour, the unofficial jazz editor for the Colin McEnroe Show, and I have a haiku story to tell, and appropriately, it is a jazz-related haiku story. Many, many years ago, I'd read the story about how Charlie Parker had basically invented bebop. This was one night in 1939 where, as he told interviewers later, he was playing Cherokee in a jam session when he discovered a way of developing solos by using the 12 tones of the chromatic scale and playing in a register that allowed him to do anything he wanted to on a solo. And this, of course, allowed him to play the thing he'd been hearing, as he put it, in his head. So this inspired me to write a haiku that I called December 1939 Haiku for Charlie Parker. And it goes like this. My foot and fingers are fused to the sky. I've started to fly. As you can see, it rhymes. I don't know if that counts for more or less points, but there you are, and that's my haiku. Thanks for listening. So long.
All right, we're back. We're talking about haiku. With us is Stanford Forrester, a poet, editor of Bottle Rockets, and he has several haiku included in the anthology, Haiku in English, the First 100 Years. Also with us is Evan Flashen. Evan Flashen is a lawyer with the firm Gracewell and Giuliani. We read about him on the interwebs because, in fact, he is trying to and has started to incorporate haiku and other short poetry into a blog he does called basispoints.com. That's basis-points.com. So, Evan, tell us a little bit about this. What was the genesis of this?
I'm going to start with a gift to you, Colin.
All right.
It's called Radio Host. Afternoon talk show, a gentle breeze that comforts, Colin McEnroe.
I think that is my first ever haiku about me, and that's very, I'm verklempt.
In terms of the blog, I do a lot of restructuring work, and it's a very serious, sometimes nasty business. There's about 1,000 blogs up there. And if I'm going to do a blog, I wanted to do something a little different, both to be a little less serious, to get the client's attention, and also if I'm going to keep doing a blog, it has to keep my attention. And with my Victorian poetry major, including poems on the website, seem natural. So they're not all haiku, but that is an easy form. And what I really call it, I said there's Japanese haiku and American haiku. Mine are really foku.
All right. And give us a poem from the blog.
This one is about it's about a meeting we had in New York. It's about 75 of us negotiating recoveries. And I was negotiating for my clients to get a better recovery. The lawyer on the other side said, you want to know what you're going to get? And he used words stronger than that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the hole in this bagel. And he threw a bagel across the room at me. This ended up in the Wall Street Journal.
I like that even before the haiku, before the poem. It's a good story.
It ended up in the Wall Street Journal, and it's called Workout Negotiations. Six lawyers yelling. Bagels thrown across the room. Agreement is reached.
I love this. And so, and by the way, we've got some people online. I will get to you, Peter from Vermont and Tyrone from Brooklyn. I think these are friends of Stanford's, but also Emily from Middletown, who's working, I think, on a haiku a day project. But so you started doing this, but the other thing that goes on the blog is that people are now invited. There's sort of a contest, right?
In the summer months, we have a contest called Win Rudy's Tickets, and anyone can participate. One of our winners was a 10-year-old who put his haiku on YouTube with a slideshow, so even Colin McEnroe can participate.
Yeah, but then I'd have to go to a Yankees game. Yuck.
Well, the blogger-in-chief the blogger-in-chief is arbitrary but unfair, so I warn you. But it's the second row behind home plate. You are seen every time they pitch the ball, so it's pretty cool seats.
Yeah.
And you just submit, and we always give a topic.
These are literally Rudy Giuliani's tickets, I assume?
No, they're the firm's tickets, but Rudy Giuliani's our partner, so yeah. We call that. And we have a different topic every month. One month we had a topic about famous Yankees, and this one is called the background is this one year the St. Louis Cardinals had the first draft pick, and the New York Yankees had the second draft pick. And it's called And the Rest is History. Mm. The Cardinals chose young Joe Garagiola. The Yanks got Yogi.
Right. So and so anyway, this is like how many people enter this contest? And I gather it's not just lawyers; all kinds of people enter.
All kinds of people, yeah. Students, people just off from the web. So it can be as few as 20, as many as 150. It's every month in the summer.
Dave has just tweeted to us, all day I listen, NPR flows through my head, brain begins to hurt. Actually, on my screen it says Brian begins to hurt, but I can't believe that that would specifically hurt Brian. Our number is 860-275-7266 if you want to call in with a haiku or call in with a comment about haiku. We've got Stanford Forrester and Evan Flash in here. And, you know, I mean, semi-seriously, Evan, I, in my own experience, even here in the Dankosky building, where I do write haiku on a pretty regular basis and circulate them to the entire staff, most of whom are, I think, deeply unhappy to get them, I still feel as though there is something kind of there's a shift of focus. There's a shift in consciousness when you move away from whatever horrible thing that your job is requiring you to do at any given moment. We all have those moments in our jobs, and do something else with it. And then there's that sort of boiling process that goes on for haiku. I actually do think that there's kind of a salutary effect to all this.
I agree. A foku just gives you a smile. A good haiku makes you contemplate. I have one about current events for you.
Okay.
Called Ever Thus, Echoing Gunshot, We Unite and We Divide. Rest in peace, Trayvon.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, let me just go back to Stanford about this, because obviously you're closer to being some kind of a kind of haiku purist. I mean, you really understand the classic
and
form.
And I'm not a purist.
Yeah, not a purist. But I'm sort of wondering.
Compared to a lot of people, I guess I would be. But yeah. In the haiku world, I would not be.
As a scholar of haiku, mm-hmm. How do you feel about us amateurs out there monkeying around with this, you know, for our own?
Well, you know, they always talk about gateway drugs, you know, and saying that marijuana is the gateway drug to heroin or whatever. And the argument is, like, people that know me and they start sending me the zombie haiku, the haiku for Jews, the cat haiku, the obituary haiku, the gangsta haiku. I basically just send them a nasty letter back. Please, I've had 15 years of you sending me this. I don't need it anymore. You know? So the argument.
Did you send them a nasty haiku that says that?
No. But the thing is, the argument is, well, at least you're getting them interested into poetry. And my feeling is it's gotten to the point where people don't recognize real poetry from this type of poetry. And if you stick to this lesson plan that we all learned in the third grade that's 60 years old and out of date, we do haiku, but then it eventually hits up against a wall where we can't take this poetry further. Mm-hmm. And with a better understanding, we could really have more. I mean, Octavio Paz, the Nobel Prize winner, wrote haiku.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, haiku is, you know, so.
Well, I'm glad you just pointed that out. I'm going to just pause there because I think this is also an interesting question. For example, Kerouac wrote haiku, too.
Wonderful haiku.
Wonderful haiku, although he, as Evan suggested, in this sort of Kerouacian spirit of American wildness, he completely threw out all form and structure. I mean,
he did three verse.
They're three-line poems, I think, but that's about the only way you could say.
I mean, the thing is, modern haiku is only 100 years old with Shiki, who we were talking about with the teacup. When he died in 1902 of tuberculosis, half the haiku world went to traditional haiku and the other half went to free verse haiku. So you had all the beats wrote haiku except for Burroughs. Ginsberg wrote haiku, Corso wrote haiku, Snyder wrote haiku, Whalen, and also Kerouac. And Kerouac really got it. And one of his famous haiku was, "In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age."
I've got one here. Empty baseball field. A robin hops along the bench. Let's see. Drunk as a hoot owl, writing letters by thunderstorm. Those are Kerouac. But I guess I was sort of wondering, and you may not know the answer to this, it sort of depends on when you start the meter on haiku, right? If you're going to say that really around 1900, that's when it starts, that's when this head of the snake that was sitting on top of a longer poem mm-hmm. was finally given enough status to sort of say, oh, well, no, that's a form.
Yeah.
So chances are then Emily Dickinson never heard of a haiku.
No. And it's the same thing. Haiku is very Zen-like, very Japanese. All Buddhism isn't Zen and all Zen is in Buddhism. It grew up in a Taoist and a Buddhist surrounding. So haiku isn't a form. As one editor, Lee Gerga, who wrote a beautiful book called Haiku, A Poet's Guide, said that haiku fundamentally is a set of aesthetic principles and a very special way of seeing the world. So it's not a form as much as an approach to seeing things.
We're right back to Wabi Sabi. All right, let me go to Emily here, and we're going to take a break pretty soon. We'll come back with more of Evan, more of Stanford. Here's Emily in Middletown. Hi, Emily.
Hi, how's it going?
Welcome to our haiku show.
Thank you.
What do you got for us? You're working on a haiku a day project? Tell us about that.
I am. So my friends and I, there's about 8 of us or so in total. We have a Google Doc that we use, and every day we write a haiku, and we post it on the document.
And does it only exist there on the document, or do you all go out and get hammered and do them like later? I mean, is it all virtual, or does it ever like cross into your actual social life?
Well, so we're kind of scattered across the country.
Oh, okay.
So some of us live in California.
So this is great. This is what the interwebs are for. Then this is what Google Docs are for. All right, well, give us a couple of haiku from the Google Doc.
Okay. Well, my sister wrote one. Can I curse on here?
No, you can't.
Okay, I'm kidding then.
Spare us. Keep our FCC license intact. I'd ask you that in 575, but I'm close enough.
Okay, I'll do one that's a little more family-friendly.
Do a tamer one, yeah.
So, like, a farmer's market, a smattering of oranges, the way the wind blows.
See, but you know, you're not selling it in your tone of voice. There's a way, Stanford, that yeah, and Evan, you both did this. There's sort of a way of reading a haiku, right?
Yeah.
Like, what would you advise Emily in terms of reading a haiku out loud?
It is a pause. I mean, it's like a musician. You know, he has to create this mindset before he reads.
Yeah.
Or she reads.
That's a really good. Compose yourself before you read your haiku.
Yeah.
Evan, I think also she was disappointed that she didn't get to read the dirty one. I heard that in her voice.
I have a few of them. I'll give them to you offline.
All right.
In terms of reading them, when you're talking even the 17-syllable form, each word, as Stanford said, you take a long time to craft, so you read the words slowly so they can sink in.
Every word
as
counts.
You go through it, yes.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a little break. As we go out, we'll go back to our voicemail and see what other kinds of work and other related haiku people dropped off for us.
I'm a full-time mom. Work-related injuries are not uncommon.
N-W-C-S. WCCG Soul Caliber 4.
Our lips touched just once. That passionate evening, I didn't remember.
For some, it is hard. Disabilities abound. I help them to learn.
Company car ride. We make small talk to pass the time. Politics are out. We are in a rush for the 2 o'clock meeting. I say, let's be late.
Commune with nature. By the sea, woods, fields, mountains. Be calm and free.
Tall, dark, and handsome. And fantastic. Producer. P.S. Who is it?
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. Ugh, 10 syllables. What am I going to do with 10 syllables? Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like me? 11, can you give me something to work with here, pop star people? Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our interns, Emily Boucher and Jules Lefevre. The part of Bill Curry was played by Emily Dickinson. Tomorrow, a show about fasting. And now, back to Colin.
Yes, we are in the middle of Ramadan, so we're doing a show about fasting, how it occurs in various religious traditions, and also what it means medically, what it does to your body when you do fast. Let me grab a few more calls here as we talk about haiku. Here's Peter in Vermont. Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Just fine.
Yeah, I'm calling to piggyback on Stanford's earlier comment that that it's a wonderful thing for so many people to be introduced to poetry or re-energized about poetry, particularly haiku. I don't particularly see a difference in the kinds of poetry, haiku, sonnet, pantoon, villanelle. There are lots of different rules, but I think it's important that people just jump in and write, regardless of syllable count. And that's somewhat of an outdated way of teaching haiku, the 575 model.
But I think there is something to be said for... it's sort of like the Mr. Miyagi school of literature, that you learn a certain discipline. You learn, you know, whether you're learning a villanelle or a sonnet or a haiku, it does. Most poets that I've talked to said one of the ways they became poets was mastering those forms, if only for the purpose of departing from them.
Absolutely. I mean, you learn the rules to break them, but you got to know the rules to know which ones to break. And with haiku, there may be more rules than any other genre of type of poetry, rather. But as Basho said, you know, nothing is worth noting that is not seen with fresh eyes. You know, those are his words, fresh eyes. And I think that's good advice for any poet, no matter what poem you're writing. You have to put your spin on it.
Stanford has an interjection, I can tell.
Yeah, and the thing is that just because we're talking about this, we focus so much on the 17-syllable stuff, there's a lot of other rules that are going on here.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, the major one, too, is every single word has to count. You should not be, as Basho said, you know, let the I'm not quoting him correctly because my Japanese is bad or horrible. But, you know, you learn from the pine, you know. It's like every word counts. There should be no padding of syllables, because the Zen idea, but most of these guys were Zen poets. You know, they were Zen priests. Is that to see the world as it is, you have to see this without shaded glasses or filters. And when you start padding these poems, you lose that vision, that straight vision. You're not seeing things as they are.
I completely agree, and I just wanted to say lastly that you know, I think even though haiku is a long established genre of poetry, I think it's completely in sync with how people are communicating today in short Facebook messages and tweets. I think we're being asked to condense our language, and who knows, technology might make poets out of us all before it's over.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, that so much that there is so much condensation, but for the most part it's bad condensation. So if you're going to be texting people "what up" all the time, you might as well learn some kind of economy of language that serves an aesthetic purpose. Although, Evan, I'm guessing in business communication, actually, there's not that much condensation. Maybe that's the luxury of what you're doing on your blog, is that for once, you know, it is boiled down to a few words instead of boilerplate.
It gets tiresome. Lawyers seem to think they're paid by the word. And their sites are all stentorian intonation about how serious and helpful I am. You should hire me. Come on. In the end, no matter how many zeros are involved, it's only money. And often at a meeting, a little smile can break a lot of ice. So if they can get a smile out of the website while we give them some legal advice, so much the better. And as I said, most importantly, it keeps me interested.
Yeah. Let me grab one more call here from Tyrone in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Just want to thank Stan for inviting me. And a couple of things. I would say about haiku. Haiku definitely made me a better poet, because actually it sharpened my eyesight in terms of seeing things. And also another beautiful thing about haiku, how it actually juxtaposes certain images or certain ideas, which on face value seems unrelated, but when you put them together, you know, this like wonderful chemistry happens, which is unbelievable, you know.
And you have to choose the word. The right word. One word can make a poem flat. Choosing the word could really make this thing pop.
And Colin, I'd like to address the issue of teaching it in 17 syllables and gateway drugs. It's a great gateway drug to poetry. I student taught at a high school for 3 weeks. The topic was poetry. And you can imagine walking into Middletown High School class saying, now I'm going to teach poetry to you. So I used E.E. Cummings. I used limericks. I used Foku. By the end of the 3 weeks, the students were writing poetry, and you go from the most basic. You go from T-ball to getting a love of baseball. You go from Foku, hopefully, to getting a love of poetry and then exploring more deeply the more serious forms of haiku and other types of poetry as well.
I just want to say that people sent me all kinds, in addition to what's on the voicemail project, people sent me all kinds of incredible haiku, a lot of work-related haiku. And I'm not going to have time to read it all. We'll try to post some more of it in some other place. But it, you know, ranged from – actually, one woman sent me this entire kind of haiku cycle about somebody chewing gum at work. I mean, it goes on. And it's really good, though. It's kind of – I wish I did have time to read it. I do want to actually give me a little haiku music over there. The emergent genius in the world of work-related haiku is a guy named Chris Brown. And apparently the Buildings and Grounds Department where he works is managed by an outside company with an electronic ticket system for work orders and repair requests. And he just started completing the descriptive part of the forms in a 575 form. So here are some examples by Chris Brown. Outlet labeled 2 with breaker verified on simply doesn't work. Excessively hot, thermometer nears 80. Heat has run amok. Leaky sink faucet, dripping distracts young learners. Water wastes away. On the loading dock, several cardboard bundles await recycling. Sink drains are clogged. Opaque water stands beneath mysterious film. I could go on. Those are just some of the haiku-related or haiku-esque work orders of Chris Brown. They're just amazing, though. And I do want to thank all the people who sent in their haiku. I wish I had time to read them all. This is from a woman who works for the Fidelco Guide Dog Foundation. Furry, warm faces, providing dogs for the blind. Greetings with tail wags. It just turns out that people, I don't know whether it's good haiku, but people like doing this. Yeah.
Well, Colin, I just want to go back to what Evan said. And again, I'm going to go back to the gateway drug thing. I've done stuff in high schools and grade schools all around the country. And what happens is when you do too many drugs, as Neil Young says, you burn out. And if you look at the demographics of people doing poetry, it's kids. And then it's adults from 40 up. Mm-hmm. When I went joined the Haiku Society of America and I was in my 30s, I was like the baby. I felt like I was going to school with my grandparents. You know, I was 20 years younger than the majority of the people. I think the average person in the Haiku Society is in their 60s. And when I've done readings, non-haiku readings here in the Hartford area, there'll be some kids that their teachers will bring them in, but there's this huge gap of 20, 30 years that's just missing from poetry. And then I think down the line, maybe it's because they're trying to get a job or get their life together or get married or yada, yada, yada.
But to that point, Evan, you know, I do think that we expect work to be not fun. I mean, there's at least a lot of people are conditioned that work will be not fun and work will be colorless. Work will be the thing that you do. That's why they call it work. And so one of the reasons, one of the things that intrigued me about what you're doing is kind of the implicit insistence, as Stanford is suggesting, that there doesn't have to be this huge 30 or 40 year bagel hole, to use your image, in your life.
Yes.
Where poetry falls out. It could be at work.
Well, we take the law very seriously. It doesn't mean we have to take ourselves quite so seriously. Mm-hmm. And again, when you're at a meeting, it can get very tense. A lot of angers can rise. If you can find the right humorous thing to say, suddenly you've created a bond between human beings as opposed to a tense situation between lawyers. And once you have that initial bond, you collectively try to find a way to reach an agreement rather than keep fighting and throwing bagels.
All right. Yeah. John from Hartford, we have just a few seconds left, so just give us your haiku straight up.
Forsythia bloom, nature's fair food appetizer, sunshine on a stick.
Forsythia, sunshine on a stick. I like that. I like where he got with there. All right, so we're going to have to go. We have to thank everybody, including Stanford Forrester and who is our sort of haiku expert guest, Evan Flashen, a lawyer with Bracewell and Giuliani. You can see his law blog, basispoints.com. We'll be back tomorrow with fasting. No snacks will be served.
Lost in the sauce we spilled. That never got refilled.
I've never thought much of formulaic verse anyway. And rhymes are not my forte.
I have been trying to get this haiku just right all night for you. All right.
I am Kyone Wolf. The problem with haiku is you get started, then